Good evening, and welcome to Shattered Lives. This is Donna Argour, a.k.a. Lady Justice. We at Shattered Lives are very excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator, getting to the heart of what crime victims experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to the show, please go to www.donnagour.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or the organization featured the week before our show was aired. And please don't forget, if you can't listen between 5 and 6 p.m. on Saturdays, you can go at any time, anywhere to our archival feature. And this is Lady Justice welcoming you this evening on March 31st. And I have to tell you that this is a milestone show this evening. This is the first one where we are airing for 60 minutes. And I'm so proud to have some amazing guests that we're going to have coming up in a couple of minutes. But first, I'd like to address a couple things, take care of business. I want to let people know that on this show, we cover a variety of topics, whether it's about crime victimization, whether it's homicide, intimate partner violence, human trafficking, human rights issues like gay and lesbian issues, sexual assault, the missing, many, many things we cover here, and we're proud to do so to help other people. And it's truly a luxury to have the extra half hour here, so I'm very excited. And I wanted to mention that this past week I had the honor and privilege of not only attending for the first time, but presenting at the Q Center for the Missing Conference in Wilmington, North Carolina, and that was truly an inspiring experience. And I encourage everyone to go to my website to see the blog. And also, there are a couple other tributes that I had done, and it just changed my life forever and made new friends. So I want to reach out to everyone there that may be new in our audience, to the people in North Carolina, to the Q Center, to people in law enforcement. I also want to welcome anyone that may be here for the first time from PFLAG National, PFLAG Local in the Hartford, Connecticut area, and a multitude of other things. Another thing I'd like to mention is that part of the mission here for Shattered Lives is also for me to progress in my personal missions, and one of my personal missions is to obtain employment in a warm weather climate and to do good for other people, whether it's using the power of the pen, which I do well, or power of the voice. And so anyone out there listening in the San Diego, Myrtle Beach, the Carolinas, Phoenix area, I welcome any inquiries with respect to crime victim advocacy, writing, social services, many of those topic areas, healthcare I'm very skilled at, and I'd like to be able to talk to you, and Delilah will be my secretary, and anything won't be turned down. In fact, we'll put up a blog that I wrote called Employment Express Advice and Wish List, which kind of lists what I'd like to do. So I will bring in my two guests in just 1 minute, but I want to mention my very accomplished producer tonight is my PR manager, my friend Delilah Jones. She may be like Dorothy. She's helped me down the yellow brick road for almost 18 months, or perhaps sometimes she's like the wizard behind the curtain, but I couldn't do without her. Welcome, Delilah.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me again.
Well, my pleasure. I couldn't do it without you. And so tonight, I'm very proud to say that we are covering a topic that not a lot of shows do, or if they do, maybe they don't cover it as well as I'd like. We're talking about human rights, social issues. We're talking about gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning intersex in terms of sexual minority people. And I have to include myself in that equation because I am a gay woman and proud to say so. just kind of helps with all of the myriad of affiliations that I have. And our guest tonight, two guests. One is Robin McCallan, and she is an MSW. She is executive director and founder of True Colors Incorporated in the Hartford, Connecticut area. Very accomplished woman. She does an amazing job. I've known her since the 80s. They have a one-of-a-kind national conference for youth that where they have at least 2,000 people attend each year. And, in fact, I believe they just had the conference. And with her, she has Kimora Harrington, who is in charge of their mentoring program. So, Robin, welcome to Shattered Lives. Come on in and join the party.
Great. Thank you so much, Donna. I'm really delighted to be here.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. I think it's a very important topic. And I would just like to give you the floor in maybe perhaps as a beginning, tell us somewhat of a historical overview of True Colors and what you do and why it's so important.
Okay, thanks. Well, True Colors does education and advocacy for sexual and gender minority youth, and I often start with my litany of the language, which is we work with gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, two-spirit, same-gender-loving, pansexual, flexual, not straight, not labeling, straight-ish, straight so far, straight with options, straight but stuff happens, gender bending, gender blending, gender queer, pan-gendered, multi-gendered, and other sexual and gender minority youth. When you work
That's
with teens,
a mouthful. Can you explain that?
And it's, you know, when you work with teens, you know, that part of their job is to establish a sense of identity and to push the envelope about, you know, human beings don't like to get into a box and stay there. And so, you know, teens are always sort of, that's an interesting sound in the background. Do you know what that is?
Sorry. That might be me, and I'm trying to make the sound go away right now. I'm doing technological things.
Okay, thanks, Maura.
Okay. Go ahead, Robin.
Okay, so anyway, so we work with teenagers, and we've got a variety of different programs. So we've got the mentoring program, which I'm going to leave Kimora to talk about when she comes on. We run the largest LGBTQIABCDEFG conference in the world, which was actually just a couple of weeks ago. And actually this year we had over 3,000 people, Donna.
3,000. Wow.
Yeah, over 3,000. We also work with the Department of Children and Families, and we sort of created a model program that is a private professional partnership between us as a private agency and the Department of Children and Families as a state agency, looking at the needs of LGBT youth in out of home care, and so we sort of impact policy. We do foster parent recruitment. And help them with programming, and then we train like, I don't know, 2,400 helping professionals a year. So that's what we do now. The program actually started as a field work project when I was getting my master's at UConn back in the early 90s.
In 1992, right? Yeah.
It started in 1992, and then in 93, I proposed to the university that I would do a conference, a one-time thing, on LGBT youth. And what happened was that, I mean, there was 250 people at the first conference. There was about 90 youth and you know, 210 or something, 200 adults. So it was really small. But it was really transformational that for me and for many of the young people that were there, the experience of being in a majority for the first time, the experience mm-hmm. of feeling welcomed and valued for the first time was really transformational. So we started, we decided to do the conference again. We started working with Gay Straight Alliances. And back then, in the early 90s, there were 4 Gay Straight Alliances in Connecticut. Now there's over 170. And,
wow.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've had a role in many of them. And,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And then I think that what's happened over the years is that we have just kept filling gaps. As we looked at what the needs were for LGBT youth and who was doing what, that we just kept moving and finding ways to try to fill some of the gaps that were existing. And so.
Well, we know that there's 169 towns in Connecticut, and I don't know how many middle schools and high schools that translates to. But in terms of gay straight alliances that would be in the schools, how if we brought that up to 2012, are there still many schools that do not have gay straight alliances because of the nature of them being too small, or they're regional, or still have that apprehension about it?
There are that most, but not all, of the high schools have gay straight alliances.
Maybe
very
Kamara
few.
Can step away with the phone and fix it and come back when it's fixed. I don't know. I'm just hearing that a lot, if she doesn't mind. Okay.
Is this any better?
Let's see. Well,
Kamara,
right now it seems okay.
Your sound needs to be turned off. Don't listen to the radio through your phone or anything else or your computer, and you'll be fine. It does sound much better.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, good. Very good. Great. Okay, go ahead, Robin. I'm sorry.
So I think there's a lot, most but not all of the high schools, I think a majority of the high schools have a gay straight alliance. A very small number of middle schools have gay straight alliances. And since the average age that kids are coming out is 11 to 13, I think that's an area where we want to focus some of our youth development work, is helping to build support systems in at the middle school level, because that's where kids really need it.
Yeah.
And
are guidance counselors very supportive of that? And are they
That depends.
That depends.
I think that some guidance counselors are very supportive, some school social workers are very supportive, and some are not. It really just depends on the individual. And I think when Kamara comes in, part of what she'll be able to share is how unique kids' experiences are. Some kids come out and it's no big deal. Other kids, and many of the kids that she works with, they come out and it's a very big deal. And so I would love to bring her in to talk a little bit about that.
Is she ready to do that right at this moment, or what?
Definitely. Yep. I think as long as there's no echo coming back, we're set. And I want to blow Robin's horn for a second, because she said that she thinks that she has something, or she thinks that True Colors has something to do with the number of GSAs in schools in Connecticut. And I can tell you that definitely Robin McCallan has been integral in bringing GSAs into schools and in creating a space for the school administrations to feel comfortable with this. You mentioned and touched on earlier that this is a topic that for a lot of people is taboo and kind of scary and something that people don't want to go near. And Robin has a wonderful way of putting it in real terms where people understand that creating and allowing space for a GSA is not saying gay is great, go out and be gay, but it's allowing a space for children to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what any of us who love young people want to create.
And I've seen her in action. I volunteered at her conferences. I know, and she does have that way, and it's very non-threatening, and it's just wonderful. So I totally agree with you. Can you expound a little bit on what you do in terms of the mentoring aspect?
Yeah, well, my kids are, and we know that LGBT teenagers are an invisible minority. The youth in the mentoring program at True Colors are youth who are in out-of-home care through the Department of Children and Family Services. So these are kids who are foster kids. These are the kids who are the throwaway children in society anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So their voice
is
very
rare. How many are we talking about?
Right now we have, in the program itself, we've got about 52. And there are so many kids out there who consider themselves affiliated to the mentoring program that there's no way I could give you an exact number on what that is. And a lot of that speaks to True Colors. And again, True Colors really is Robin's baby. So it speaks to this extended family that we've created, where our program, or our contract with the Department of Children and Families says that we accept children between the ages of 14 and 21, but I just left a 22-year-old who is never going to believe that she's not a part of our program because we give them the support and love that they can't get from other places. Our kids, when Robin was saying that they're coming out, can be vastly different. Our children don't live in their families of origin. So if my son went out and did something that I didn't completely agree with, well, he's my child, I love him, I'm going to accept him, and I'm going to figure out how to work through whatever this is that I don't completely agree with. If the only person who's there to care for me is being paid and they don't agree with who I am, then they're not coming from the same place of love. They're not coming from the place of I love and accept this kid, so how do we deal with this issue? They just see this issue as a problem that needs to either be swept under the rug or made to go away. Mm-hmm. And we do have many social workers who aren't willing to accept their LGBT clients. Now, that said, please don't let this sound like an attack on DCF social workers, because there are some amazing, and I'm going to call a name right now, Tanya Sutton. If there are people in Connecticut, this woman is amazing. And she does a great job of being there for her young LGBT clients. But she also, unfortunately, has to be there for young LGBT clients that belong to other social workers in her office, because there are many people who are so uncomfortable with just the topic of any type of sexual minority, anything, that they're not, they're unable, because of their own prejudices, they're unable to meet the needs of their clients.
So are they getting referred to her, and then her caseloads are, you know, just increasing, you know, threefold or whatever?
No, she's just turned into some type of a, I guess you would say, a consultant for any other social worker. And there are kids who just, if you were at our conference this year, you saw young people there who were not Tanya Sutton's clients, who were there only because Tanya registered them and she made sure to transport them herself.
That's great. Wow. Has this been, Robin or Kimora, has this been replicated in terms of this mentoring in other states that you're aware of?
Not yet, but we are starting to, and Robin can speak a little bit more about the evaluation of the program that we're getting ready to go through in hopes of replicating it. I've been running the program now for 7 years, and what I say when I speak about it is I've drunk the Kool-Aid, and it's good. Mentoring saves lives. Our young people, they fall in love with their mentors, and I mean this in the most beautiful, pure way. We are creating lifelong connections between young people and adults in ways that young people and adults should be connected. To say that there are young people in my program who are not loved by anyone sounds horrible, and any caring person is going to know that that can't be true. But the truth is, for many of our young people, there is not a single soul on this earth who loves them until they come to the True Colors Mentoring Program. And
I know that,
thank
and
you,
it
Robin.
My heart. Yeah, I've spoken to them, and I know that, too, in working with people with multiple disabilities, and they are the throwaway people as well. So there are a lot of people out there, and thank goodness for organizations like yours and where I work in, you know, the safety nets, because they wouldn't have anybody else, you know?
Yeah.
And they thrive. They thrive with love.
Right, and that's what it should be. I'm just wondering, Robin, you had said that there were 3,000 people this year.
Right.
And you said, you know, this is the largest in the world. Have they come from the Caribbean islands? I mean, what is the expanse of people who have traveled up
okay,
to
well,
now?
Wait, hold on. What I'm going to do is I just got a message from our office administrator that she looked at it. So we had, here's the total numbers for this year. We had 3,113 participants,
wow.
Over 2,400 on Friday alone, and that we had 115 high schools that participated. We had 30 colleges and universities, and they came from 14 different states, from Arizona, California, Connecticut, D.C., Illinois, Massachusetts, Maine, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Texas, and Vermont.
Wow.
And so in terms of out of the country, I mean, I think that people, you know, sometimes people have come and sometimes they haven't. The conference itself and all of our programming, it's really very diverse in terms of race, ethnicity, and gender.
Right.
And that I think one of the areas where we want to do, you know, some additional work is in creating more support services for parents as their kids come out. PFLAG's wonderful, 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 and it does amazing work, and there's a number of PFLAGs around the state. But sometimes when a family comes from a tight ethnic community like West Indian or, you know, Polish or a recent immigrant, it can be very hard to go outside of your kinship network and tell strangers your business.
Or culturally, they may not, you know, want to divulge. I get that too in terms of disability issues.
Right.
It's a private family matter, and I know I have said that before. When we work with intimate partner homicide or intimate partner violence, people tend to think, oh, it's a family matter, it's a private matter. Well, well, that same concept is here too. No, it's not. It involves a whole group of people. It's not just the one person that comes out.
Right. It impacts their entire family. And one of the things that we know is that the number one sort of indicator of outcome for kids, like the number one predictor of how they're going to do in the world, is the response of their families to their coming out. And so the more we can do to help families sort of manage their feelings and go in, you know, like, coming out is a process not just for the kid but for the family. And so if there's ways that we can support the families in going through that, that's something that's really important. And, you know, PFLAG does that extraordinarily well. And there's some families for whom that model is just foreign.
Am I right in noting that, I mean, initially it was primarily a youth focus, and like you said, you're also trying to concentrate on other adults and the family unit. So you're trying to pull in more of those the nuclear family, would you say?
We're trying to pull in their kinship network because for some kids, their bio parents might not be in the picture or might not be, you know, the best resource for them. But a lot of times there's other members of the kinship network, an aunt or an uncle or a cousin or somebody that we can help get kids connected to. I would have to say that our role with adults is very limited in the sense that our primary goal is to focus on the needs of young people, and that means working with adults who work with young people so that they are culturally competent to meet the needs of the kids that are in their care. And so it was very sad on Friday. Leah and I were still here at 6 o'clock, and there was a knock on the door, and these two very young men, both of whom were 18, were at the door saying that that one of them had been thrown out of his family. He had nowhere to go, and they didn't know what to do. And because he was 18, DCF couldn't help. And so
age cutoffs for every program.
He just was so lost. We gave him all the information about the shelters in Hartford, and the directions and all this kind of stuff. But as a young gay man who was very gentle and
maybe naive,
but very gentle and not at all rough and tumble, that the shelters might not be such a safe place for him. So we put it out on our network. And it's amazing how many of our mentors, responded like, well, it's only for a little while, they can come, let's talk about this. And our mentors, I think that True Colors does really good work, and the work that we do is amazing. And, the people that we engage with, the mentors, the volunteers who make the conference possible, there's no way that we could underestimate or minimize the importance of the role that they play.
Well, that's the essence of what you do. That it sounds like that particular young man was saved for that period of time, and that's great. Two things. One, I know there's a large faction of gay youth that are homeless and have nowhere to go. Is there a particular data that you can speak to right now that are out there with nobody, no resources, and you try to help meet the need as best you can, but just looking at it from a national standpoint, the homeless in general just keeps increasing.
Right. And that gay kids represent somewhere around, you know, depending upon the study that you look at, you know, gay kids represent somewhere between 5 and 10 or 11% of the youth population, but they represent between 25 and 40% of the homeless youth population.
Wow.
So that is, you know, that says that there's a lot going on out there, and that, you know, that some kids come out and people go like, whatever, whatever. Other kids come out and they get thrown out. And,
you know.
Maura, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, what I wanted to add to that is that it's not just bio families where that's happening.
Right.
So in my program, there are DCF kids, Department of Children and Family Kids, and most of them are not in out-of-home care because of their gender or orientation. But what happens is once they're in the system and they come out, there's a lot of peer pressure. The group homes are really not safe places. Robin was touching on it with this young man who was gentle. If you are not a typically gendered boy in a group home, you're going to be a target and it's not going to be safe for you. So a lot of our kids are taken from homes that, for whatever reason, were not safe, put in state care where we want to believe that we're making them safe, and they end up experiencing a lot of abuse and trauma in those situations, and then they're running away from those places.
Right.
So they're being re-victimized.
Yeah.
I mean, good intentions to put them in state care, but then again, right. And, wow. I was wondering, Delilah, as the sort of the person that the every man person and the person that has not experienced some of the issues that we deal with every day, you always have some intriguing questions from your perspective, and I wondered if you had anything that you'd like to ask Robin about this topic.
Yeah, I always say a lot of times I bring ignorance to the table, but it's always the love of learning that I like about shows like this, so that I'm learning about an issue that right now I don't know that much about. I do have a person out in Oregon, actually, who works with throwaway teens, and I've a little bit about that through her. She herself was a throwaway teen, so she lived it. She knows it very, very well. What do you find is like the worst issue that's facing these kids today? You know, when they're in, you've gone over what happens when they're in school. How do you prepare their families? How do you prepare them to deal with this issue as they're coming out?
So I'll start that, and then I want to throw it over to Kimora for some perspectives from her work in the mentoring program as well, and also, Kimora, a little bit your work with the National Black Justice Coalition would be really cool to kind of bring in there too. But that I think that ideally, in an ideal situation, we would be able to work with families really early in the process, and that when a kid is beginning to come out and families struggle, that, you know, families' final response is almost never their initial response. You know, even if they start very rejecting, most families don't stay there. They move, you know, towards at least ambivalence and hopefully towards acceptance. And so figuring out how to wrap services around families as their kids are coming out, and then giving family members the time and the support to deal with the feelings that they're having about their kid coming out, and then supporting the child in giving the family time to deal with what's happening. You know,
right, kids, we all want it to turn around abracadabra, but it doesn't
exactly
happen that way.
Exactly.
Never.
Yeah.
Right.
And so,
it's multifaceted program that you have to put all these little puzzle pieces in place.
Exactly.
The timing has to be right. So I'm sure that, you know, a lot of times it just doesn't run smoothly as you wish it would.
Right.
No.
Kimora, do you want to add anything to the family piece?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm just going to add on what you were just saying, which is life is messy. When you're dealing with human beings, it never runs the way that we think it's going to run. We can set all of our ducks up in a row, but then one of those ducts goes out and comes out and things change immediately. But I think what our children need more than anything else is they need comprehensive wraparound services. So when a young person comes to us and they're having issues around their orientation or gender, to not just look at the issues around orientation and gender. There's a lot of other stuff. Teenagers have so much going on. LGBT teenagers have so much going on. Youth of color have so much stuff going on. Youth who are in the system have so much stuff going on that if we only focus on their orientation, we're missing the larger scope, larger picture. And also time and space. And I think Robin hit on making sure that we give the kids the space to give the people who love them time and space. Teenagers need things to happen right now, today. And when we talk with teenagers and we are talking about how they're going to come out to their parents or even how their parents are dealing with their coming out, I like to ask them the question, so how long did it take you to go from knowing that you were okay, gay, to really being okay with being gay? And we come up with whatever number that is. And they say, okay, multiply that by 5 because mom is old and slow. And
or grandma or whoever, yeah.
Grandma,
well,
grandpa.
That's a great explanation. You know, I want you in my corner, Kumara, if I were in that predicament right now. And I just want to mention, and maybe I'm really in the minority. I mean, I'm in the minority of so many different affiliations. It's like, okay, which one do you want? Which one are you today, Donna? I happened to come out when I was 36 years old, and yeah, so that's quite late. When I was, if I actually thought about it, I probably had inklings when I was about 13. And
Donna, can I tell you that in my program right now, when we talk about when we come out, I think that when I came out at 21 was old, and right now I have an 11-year-old in my program who knows that he's gay. So I just wanted to throw that piece in as older folks are listening to this, and they're thinking, oh, I came out at 21, I came out at 22, I came out at 30.
Yep.
I have a young man who's 11 who's been out for close to a year now.
Yep.
Wow.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I needed to interject about age.
No, that's fine, and maybe everything is relative, but you just don't know what your circumstance is, and you know it makes it so hard. And so a couple things I'm wondering right now, since we have a half an hour, that's great, right, Delilah? Half an hour. Let's see. How does someone become a mentor if they want to be a member, not a mentor? Now, I know we're talking about Connecticut. It might be similar in other states, but if they're listening to this and hearing how wonderful this program is and how cool that both of you are and you want to be involved, please give us some information with regard to that they can write down, and then we'll talk about it at the end as well.
Well, definitely. If they're in Connecticut and they're interested, actually, if they're in Connecticut, New York, or Massachusetts, in any of the border towns, they can contact us at www.ourtruecolors.org.
Mm-hmm.
The application is right there, and that's the beginning. But the process takes quite a while. So after they fill out the application and get it to us, we ask for references. They need to send us the references, and then we need to get letters from the people who they use as their references. We run their DCF, or DCF actually runs the background check for us, so that we know that they don't have any kind of history that would get in the way of mentoring. And then after that, they've got to come to a full-day training. And that full-day training is kind of a slice of life scary shocker, because so many people come to this idea of LGBT mentoring with this idea that, you know, I'm going to mentor a young person who was like me when I was a teenager, and I'm going to go in there and I'm going to say, hey, guess what, being gay is okay, there are wonderful great gay Americans, there are wonderful gay people all over this world everywhere, and you're going to be okay, and then, you know, the sky opens up, the doves fly, and everything is wonderful. And again, life is not linear. No, it hasn't yet, and I keep trying, but no. But it takes a while, and there's a lot of backsliding, because the young people who are in our program, and this is pretty much across the board, young people who are being referred to mentoring programs are young people with a few issues, more than just their orientation.
Sure.
So our young people in the mentoring program right now, I don't think, we just had a conversation, and I think every young person who is in the program right now has experienced some sort of sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Every young person in my program has experienced some sort of physical or emotional trauma. PTSD is a very common diagnosis in my program, as is what is the other one that we're dealing with? Well, ADHD, ADHD, definitely. But we're also dealing with some other diagnoses that kind of get in the way of understanding who you are mm-hmm. outside of any type of orientation.
Well, are you saying like other mental health
problems, mental health issues,
addiction, things like that?
Lots of mental health issues. We have some addiction issues, and I'd like to touch on the addiction issues in a bit because those always break my heart because our kids are self-medicating. But after a mentor has gone through this whole process of being trained, then they come and for 10 weeks with us, they're a group tour, which means they're giving kids rides to activities, kids who aren't matched yet, and they're meeting other mentors. And they're really seeing our kids interact with each other in public because, boy, gay teenagers can be some loud, obnoxious, in-your-face people who sometimes you're really not going to like them.
Right.
But you'll always love them, and the good mentors are the ones who find a love in their heart. So we just, for the conference, we had one mentor, Evan, who, for whatever reason, felt compelled to rent a minivan, thank you so much, Evan, and drive around the state of Connecticut picking up a bunch of our kids and bringing them to the conference. And these are kids
wow.
who wouldn't have been able to make it to the conference without Evan. So Evan created a wonderful world.
Can you just clarify, are the mentors of the same age bracket, or can they also be older adults as mentors
who happen to
be gay?
No, they're only older adults. To be a mentor in the mentoring program, you have to be 24, at least 24 or over. And being gay is not a requirement at all.
Okay.
We love our heterosexual mentors. I've got a couple right now, a heterosexual couple down in Fairfield County who are waiting to be matched, and I'll be matching them with one of our younger kids who just needs a family that will love him because
mm-hmm.
so many of our kids have their families of origin tell them that they're horrible. And you've heard this you've heard us talk about our wonderful extended family at True Colors and how we do create a place to love our children.
Right.
And from that, many kids get the false sense that straight people are horrible and bad and hate us and are mean to us. Gay people are great and wonderful and love us, and we're safe there.
Hey, there's good, bad, and ugly in every group.
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, there's some not-so-great gay folks out there.
Right.
And there's some amazing, wonderful heterosexual folks. So we enjoy bringing our heterosexual mentors in. I just matched a young woman on Thursday with a heterosexual mentor who their orientation isn't the same, but they both have experienced the same trauma history. So for this young woman, and her trauma history is incredibly extensive. It includes fathers and grandfathers and all kinds of folks doing awful things. And for her, having a lesbian who doesn't have a background in trauma, there would be a lot more work in that relationship before she was able to really start talking about the issues that are affecting her.
Mm-hmm.
Having a mentor who, okay, they don't share an orientation, but they both have the same trauma background, and this wonderful mentor has worked through her stuff
mm-hmm.
and has created a wonderful world for herself that acknowledges where she comes from,
yeah.
but she's created a beautiful world for herself now. And I can't wait to see what this relationship is going to look like in 2 years.
Well,
and their
great.
Orientation has less to do with it than
sure.
love and understanding.
It just shows that the puzzle pieces can fit together. It doesn't have to be all, from, like you say, from the same background. And
right.
Robin, I was wondering if you could talk a little about, because this show is has to do with crime issues as well, but number one, does social media in general help or hurt the cause and just letting us be ourselves? And then maybe to talk about harassment and bashing and those kids
mm-hmm.
that you do have to deal with that are crime victims. Because I happen to be, all three of those, disabled,
right.
a crime victim, and gay, and, three for one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Well, first of all, I think that one of the things that we find is that the more gender nonconforming a kid is, the more likely they are to receive harassment in all the different parts of their lives. So at home, at school, in the community at large, if they get into the system in the group homes and stuff. That so boys who are very gentle and or effeminate, girls who are very masculine or masculine identified are the ones that are the most likely to be targets of other people's harassment.
Mm-hmm.
That it's interesting, in schools, the years in which kids are really sort of the most at risk for harassment is in that 7th, 8th, 9th grade, that middle school era, and that the two groups of kids that seem to get targeted the most are kids who are special education kids, mm-hmm. right, or special needs kids, and gender nonconforming kids. And so, you know, studies show that as many as one out of five gay, lesbian, bi, and trans kids stays home on any particular day from school because of the level of harassment that they receive, that our kids are more likely to be victims. I mean, they're seven times more likely to be assaulted with a weapon at school than their heterosexual
wow.
peers. So they tend to experience harassment. And the thing about violence is, in the bullying piece, is that it's a you have to be on hyper alert every second of your day at school, because at any second, name calling can escalate to violence. And
mm-hmm.
so the stress that these kids experience in trying to keep themselves safe and out of trouble.
Hypervigilant. That's an excellent
yeah.
point. I've heard a lot
yeah.
of educators talk about it, but you're the first one that's really brought that point out.
Yeah, that I think that I was one kid we worked with that he went to the largest high school in Connecticut, which has lots of support systems for LGBT youth. They have some great teachers. They've got some great, the resource officer there is wonderfully supportive. And this young man went through 4 years of high school with his hood up over his head, his shoulders scrunched, and trying to walk as close to the walls as possible to be as invisible as possible, because if somebody saw him, they heard him. You know, and
because even with all this help available, he didn't
right.
feel comfortable to reaching
right.
out to those resources.
And he was involved with the resources, but the resources couldn't be there 24/7. You
right.
know, that kids are in the classroom, kids get harassed, but
mm-hmm.
But in the hallways and the bathrooms and the
right.
you know, the parking lots, that people can't watch it 24/7.
Right. And, well, let me ask you this: do they ever, you know, like what they do in gangs? Do they ever try to hire some other kids to protect them?
I haven't actually seen that.
No.
That happened.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting idea. I haven't seen them do that, although I've seen people do lots of different things. And I think, you know, bullying is a focus of lots of attention. And at the same time, I mean, bullying is a specific kind of behavior, and that it can go from bullying to, you know, to hate crimes and to stuff. I think that what schools should do and what people should do is intervene much sooner. There's a woman, a friend of mine at the Department of Ed here, who always says, if you see mean, intervene. You know,
uh-huh.
if you see somebody being mean, intervene. If you hear something, say something. If you see something, say something. That's how we stop meanness from escalating into, you know, harassment and violence.
Well, does it typically go maybe from, you know, the name calling to the physical, and then potentially suicide or homicide, because
kids definitely have higher risks of suicide. And
mm-hmm.
interestingly, back in, you remember the Columbine and that series of situations where young men brought guns to school?
Yeah.
More than half of the young men who brought guns to school during that spate of murders were young men who had been tortured about being gay. Whether they were or not, nobody knows.
Uh-huh.
But they were
wow.
called gay, and they were picked on for being different. And
mm-hmm.
And now that's not an excuse, you know, because
no.
obviously nobody should. But you can see how kids could get just tortured to the point where they fight back. And, you know,
and it's interesting how we allow mm-hmm. bullying to happen. So we have no tolerance rules and no tolerance policies.
Right.
But last year I was called into a school, and it was interesting. There was a young man who was gay who was being tortured and bullied 24/7 by all the – and, again, he was getting it on his Facebook. He was getting the text. He was getting all kinds of nonsense from folks. And the school was aware of it, and they brought the kids in, and they talked about it a couple times, and, you know, this needs to end. They didn't call me until the gay kid – they were in the stairwell. The gay kid finally had enough. He punched some kid and knocked him down the stairs, and I think I'm trying to remember what bone was broken, but he broke a bone in this young man's body, at which point I was called. And the message being sent was, it is okay to say mean things to the gay kid. The second the gay kid fights back, physically fights back, it's a problem, and then we need to address it.
Right.
It should never be escalating, you know, that far. And, you know, I don't know if, like, geographically there's lesser tolerances, but, again, Delilah, you live in the Carolinas. Do you know, in terms of just culturally, do you get a sense that, I mean, I think we're more progressive in the Northeast with some things as compared to other areas. And you deal with so many social issues and human rights issues, you know, in your job and talk to many people throughout the nation. What's your sense of that?
Well, I think you're right, Dawn. I think, you know, up in the area that you live, you said it right. You deal with it. And you have resources, and you make resources to deal with it. Now, I've lived in the South a long, long time, and we're more apt to just turn the other way, put your head in the sand. You know, everything is wonderful. That doesn't happen here, and that's kind of to do with all issues. We're very behind in, you know, in domestic violence legislation and human trafficking legislation, which, you know, we're all working towards trying to correct, but you're miles ahead of what we're doing down here.
Well, how can we get true colors in your area? We need a true colors in your area.
Yeah. Well, I know there's something very similar to True Colors growing in Atlanta, where they've got a Friday night drop-in, and they don't have a mentoring program like ours, but they've got a peer support program where young people, it's a wonderful program. A friend of mine is volunteering there right now, and they are creating this kind of kinship network for young people. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back on the idea that we're a bit more progressive up here. Mm-hmm. On the whole, we are, and that lulls us into complacency.
Right.
And it creates a false sense of safety for our young people. So 3 years ago, I was, and this is going to sound horrible, but please hear me out, I was overjoyed when one of the young people in my program, his church videotaped his exorcism because they were exorcising him to make the gay go away. Because this happens with frequency in beautiful Connecticut.
Right.
However, when we talk about this is Connecticut. When I talk about gay exorcisms, everyone knows that I'm talking about Tennessee. I'm talking about Mississippi. I'm talking about somewhere below the Mason-Dixon line where they're not as evolved as us and all these wonderful things that we try to say about people regionally. But I know that in Tennessee, in Nashville, there are wonderful supports for LGBT teenagers.
Right. And I know Florida's got Jasmine and some other folks. And then, you know, there are still parts of the country in, you know, often in the Midwest and some places. I think Kimora's point is really well taken. I have found from my own personal experiences, whenever I've made an assumption about how somebody's response is going to be to their kid, that I've been absolutely wrong. Like, I remember doing a training with foster parents, and this very, very masculine, very big Jamaican father was in the room, and I thought to myself, you know, uh-oh.
This isn't going to go well.
Yeah, this isn't going to go well. And it turned out that he was, like, the most amazing support person for his effeminate gay son. That he was like, you know, nobody was going to touch his son, nobody was going to make fun of his son, and I was reminded yet again of how, you know, assumptions make an ass out of you or me,
and we should never do it.
And then I think, you know, to Kimora's point, that people get lulled into complacency in thinking that this part, you know, this community is less homophobic than this community, or this part of the world is less homophobic than this part of the world, or this part of the country, and that the reality is that there's homophobia everywhere.
Definitely.
It just looks different.
Yes.
You know,
I think
different.
So. It's individual households, and doesn't have to do with economics either.
No, it doesn't.
It really doesn't, right? And but do you think, again, to my question regarding social media and how it's portrayed and how it's dealt with, or just media in general, not necessarily, you know, I just think, you know, they make things worse. They're such a hindrance, and everything is, you know, automatic this and automatic that, that if you had your wish, how would you want to educate them in terms of dealing with this issue of fairness or being able to report on things more accurately so that they don't flame the fires and they're not more suicides and homicides and, mm-hmm. and harassment issues.
You know, I don't know, because I think it's definitely a mixed bag that the vast majority of our youth meet their first other gay person online these days. You know, that's both a good thing and a challenging thing.
Right.
And you know, I mean, there's obviously safety issues and so on around that, but it's definitely you know, a mixed bag. And that I was listening to NPR this morning on the way in, and they were talking about terrorism and the connection between terrorism and the media. So on the one hand, when something happens that's really terrible or something's going on that's really terrible, the media has a certain obligation to, you know, to provide information about that, you know, that's how people find out what's going on. But on the mm-hmm. other hand, by providing the information, they're giving a forum to the people that are doing the violence and sort of making them, you know, heroes. So I do think that it's a double-edged sword. I would love to see more gender people doing a better job with gender and transgender stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like,
I agree.
ABC did that horrible show for 5 minutes with the guys who dressed as women in order to get a job. And that was, like, wildly offensive.
Wow. I can imagine. Well, I'm wondering, too, how can we as a show here or as an entity, how can we help True Colors? And if you, I'm also wondering if other people in other states want to reach out to you for ideas or resources, are you amenable? We want to be able to share and help resource what we need. And so I'm just wondering about that.
I think we often do consultation with folks from other states, and we also, you know, network with other states to learn what they're doing. You know, so mm-hmm. I think that it's a two-way street. In terms of people supporting True Colors, obviously, if you're in the area, you know, volunteers or you know, and no matter where you are, here's something I want to say: no matter where you are, if you have room in your heart, in your home, there is a teenager, regardless of their orientation or gender identity and expression, who is desperate for a family. All over the country, teens end up in, you know, group homes and shelters or signing themselves out or running away because there's no families that are willing to open their hearts and their homes to them. So I would encourage people that if you've ever thought about fostering, you know, there are kids, especially older kids, who really need you. If there's not an LGBT mentoring program in your area, which there probably isn't, because I think that us and California are the only two that are running a program right now, although I just got an email today from somebody in the Midwest that's wanting to start a program. So, you know, but there's also... there's other mentoring programs that work with at-risk kids that people can get involved with their own community. And obviously, mm-hmm. if you've got some resources, we're a nonprofit. We depend upon the kindness of strangers for our
donations too.
And people can donate right online or and so on. And that would always be something that would be really helpful. We're at www.ourtruecolors.org.
Mm-hmm.
Kamora, you got anything?
Well, what I have to say is simple, but it's an aha moment for a lot of people, which is if and when you see LGBT teenagers out in public, smile at them.
Yeah.
Possibly start a conversation. It boggles my mind how many adults are willing to look at young people in the street and sneer at them,
mm-hmm.
Tell them they're going to hell, tell them they're an abomination, tell them they need to stop being like that, but taking it upon themselves to tell young people, you're not good enough to be on this earth with me.
Yeah.
And we can counter that by acknowledging them. I remember last summer I was driving in West Hartford, and there was nothing about me or my car that would, well, it's a Subaru station wagon, but outside of that, there was nothing that was going to outwardly mark me as a lesbian. And there were these two young lesbians who are holding hands, and they're getting ready to cross the street, and they're sharing whatever that beautiful 16, 17-year-old moment was. They were sharing that moment of love. And then one of them turned and saw me, and her face very quickly said, uh-oh. And I smiled, and I watched her visibly relax. And those moments are so important. So if you don't have a dollar, if you don't have time, if you don't have an extra bedroom to spare, smile at LGBT teenagers. And like Robin says, if you see mean, intervene. Don't allow it to happen.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. Those are very practical and so needed suggestions that we have. I mean, I think a lot of those things would apply to people with disabilities, and I just have to say that it's very hard being a person of sexual minority and also having a disability because you can't get beyond, if you have a physical disability, you can't seem to get beyond that. And not every person in the gay community is kind as well.
Right, exactly.
So it's very hard, Robin. It is very hard.
Yeah.
So I'm just here doing my thing, trying to help as many different people as I know about, because I have an affiliation for so many things. And we'll just see, you know, there are people that see beyond the obvious. Who cares if you have orange hair?
Right.
Who cares if you have a limp? Or who cares, whatever. It's the person behind that superficiality. And I think, like you say, adults can be just as cruel. They're adults.
Right.
They're supposed to be mature, but often they are not.
Right.
You know, and it's just very disheartening. We have to take each day and just fight one day at a time.
Right.
You know?
Donna, could I interrupt for one quick second? Because
you just reminded me.
There's a program in Bridgeport that's part of the Workplace Initiative in Bridgeport. It's called Add Us In, and it's a program that specifically targets LGBT folks who have disabilities with employment support systems.
Uh-huh.
So if you're down, if you know, if any of your listeners are identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, and also as a person with a disability, emotional, mental, or physical disability, there's a program that has a specific resources for helping folks get job support. And,
that is wonderful. Is that through the Department of Labor or something?
It is. It is. And it's a federal grant that came in. They're called Add Us In.
Okay.
And so people could Google Add Us In and find that. Jamie Goddard at the workplace in Bridgeport is the person who's running that program. And,
oh, that's wonderful.
And
well,
that's a way of, you know, sort of connecting.
That may meet the need for some people, yes.
Yeah.
So, we're very fortunate to have that information. Delilah, do you have something that you'd like to ask before we have to sign off? I'm trying to watch the time here. We have a couple other minutes.
Yeah, I just really want to say thank you to both Robin and Kimora for not only the work that you're doing, but for coming to the show and sharing it with us and sharing it with the listeners. And, you know, this show goes out to the whole world if we can get it there. And I think it's we'll work on it. But it's an issue there again. It's a human issue, and it hurts my heart to know that there's human beings out here that just can't get along for whatever reason. And, you know, I support you and I salute you for all the good things that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks so much for having us.
It was
great.
Yeah, I think we've got, about a minute or so? I'm just wondering, Robin, have you been requested to go throughout the nation and do trainings in a lot of other states?
Yeah, actually both Cormar and I have done that. And my most favorite one was that I was asked to do a training in Brussels.
I was going to bring that one up if you didn't.
Last fall I went to Brussels and did a training on organizing with LGBT youth, which was really, I have to say, a highlight. And so I'm really loving it. I just got back from L.A. last week doing some consultation on curriculum stuff and curriculum development and training, which I also really love. So it's very exciting. exciting work. And Kimora was on the Tyra Banks show, I just want to say.
That was kind of fun. That and
very
CNN.
Cool.
Tyra Banks was a great fun time.
Is that right?
Because, but it was a no-brainer. That was with our kid who had been exercised. So,
right.
You know, I was on the side of right. But the one that I'm very proud of, and if you Google us, we were on CNN 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that show, really, they were going to interview some mentors, some mentees, some people at True Colors. And we'd been talking for months before the show happened. But when the producers and the film crew got to our office and met our young people, they realized that this wonderful language that we use of extended family and love is not lip service. They were in a room with what was supposed to be a 10-minute period, just a 10-minute Q&A with some kids in the program.
Right.
They stayed in that room for over an hour.
Wow.
And the entire focus of the show was on us creating a space for our children to support each other and them supporting each other. You can find that on YouTube, and I'm incredibly proud of that.
Oh,
yeah.
that is so impressive, you know. And if there's any way that we can help you in terms of promotion individually or as a group, you know, the company that I'm with, that Delilah's manager with, you could always consult with her. And I just have to say, I would love for you to come back sometime if you have some other messages you'd like to impart. It's been wonderful, and thank you so much. And please let's keep in touch because we have
great.
A lot of similar goals.
Great, thanks
thank
so much,
so
Donna.
Okay.
Thanks, Delilah. Bye, Kimora.
Thanks. Bye.
That's
keep running your mouth for good, ladies. Thank you.
Yes, and remember, audience, that when it comes to helping survivors of crime, don't just try, make it happen. And please do stay tuned for next week, Saturday, 5 to 6, for some more interesting guests. So good night, ladies.
Good night.
Thank you, Delilah. And we'll
see you.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Awesome, Robert, are you there?